Case number 13-2471, United States versus James E. Johnson. And it's Mr. Mullins. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Brian Mullins. I represent the appellant James Johnson in this case. This is, as the government said in its brief, an unusual sentencing appeal in that we are not arguing that the 48-month sentence was unreasonable, and we're not asking the court to reconsider the length of the sentence that was imposed. But the case does have practical consequences, we believe, for Mr. Johnson, in that Mr. Johnson has been accepted into the Bureau of Prisons 500-hour drug treatment program. At this point, he's still undergoing the program. At this point, I do not believe that he would be eligible for the early release element of the program once he completes the program, because, at least in part, because of the court's finding that Mr. Johnson possessed a firearm in connection with this offense. So that early release program can result in an inmate being released as much as a year before their sentence is due to expire. So we believe that this case is ripe, and there are practical consequences. I would like to focus on three aspects of the district court's ruling. I think they're kind of mixed factual and legal questions in the district court's analysis of how it found that Mr. Johnson possessed a firearm that we believe are clearly erroneous.
May I ask you a quick question, please? There were a number of searches and a number of firearms involved here. So just to be completely clear, in which residence was the assault rifle found?
The assault rifle was found in the co-conspirator's residence. And I believe it's the residence on 44th and North Avenue in Milwaukee. And this was a residence that in which DB and KR were living. And that's the assault rifle. And that is the... It appears to me that that was the gun that the district court used to apply the firearm enhancement.
Because the pre-sentence report actually says only that DB told police he moved to Port Washington Street and purchased the firearm found there. So the question that became whether the assault rifle was the weapon found there.
And it is somewhat confusing. There are a number of guns and a number of different residences involved, and my understanding from the reports in the case and the pre-sentence report is that the assault rifle was found at 44th and North Avenue, and that was the gun that was used to apply the enhancement.
If that bothers any of you, that banging, let me know.
Thank you. I'm fine with banging or not. Unless the court has any other questions on that issue, I will move on to the three issues that I would like to focus on that I think show that the district court made a clearly erroneous finding. The first is that the court said that Mr. Johnson basically just gave a bare denial to the allegation in the PSR that he possessed the gun. This passage from the district court's sentencing is that he, meaning Mr. Johnson, indicates that the only evidence to connect him to the assault rifle are the statements from DB and KR, and he claims that they fabricated their stories. However, he doesn't present any evidence supporting the claim of fabrication, as he is required to do in contesting the PSR. And we believe that we did present evidence that supports a claim of fabrication and calls their statements into question, specifically that their statements conflicted. As we mentioned in the brief, KR said that Mr. Johnson provided the gun. DB said that No, in fact, DB provided the gun, although Mr. Johnson was aware that it was there and he had handled it on at least one occasion. And we believe that pointing out conflicting evidence in the record is more than a bare denial and does then trigger the burden shifting to the government to show that the PSR's facts are in fact true. And I think the district court didn't really, it acknowledged that there were differences in the witness statements, but didn't really consider the differences material to the issue. But I think they are material because the witness statements tend to show Mr. Johnson either possessed the weapon or did not possess the weapon. I think KR's statement, if believed.
But why does it matter, actually, whether he himself possessed the assault rifle? I mean, isn't the upward adjustment equally applicable if the co-conspirator possessed it in furtherance of jointly undertaken activity, and that was reasonably foreseeable, and isn't that undisputed here?
It is certainly a basis for the enhancement. I do not believe it's undisputed. The district court kind of gave an alternative ruling. It gave one ruling that, well, I think the evidence shows that Mr. Johnson possessed the gun because there is credible evidence that he provided the gun to the co-conspirators. But even if that isn't the case, then the co-conspirators definitely possessed the gun, and Mr. Johnson, it was foreseeable to Mr. Johnson. And we do not believe that, and that's, I guess, the other element of our criticism of the district court's finding, or at least that shows that the district court's finding might be clearly erroneous, is that in finding that it was reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Johnson that the co-conspirators would use the firearm in connection with drug dealing, I think it has to be more than reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Johnson that they had a gun. It has to be reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Johnson that they were going to use the gun to facilitate the conspiracy, which in this case was selling heroin.
Yeah, well, I mean, given the type of activity and the prevalence of guns found in all of these locations, surely you aren't, well, are you arguing that it wasn't reasonably foreseeable?
Well, the evidence that the district court relied on that it was reasonably foreseeable largely was that DB and KR routinely possessed both drugs and firearms in the presence of the defendant. This was the district court's statement at the sentencing. But if you look at the PSR, the PSR doesn't support the district court's conclusion that DB and KR routinely possessed both drugs and firearms in the presence of Mr. Johnson. The PSR had one statement regarding DB and KR's possession or reference to a firearm in Mr. Johnson's presence, which was DB's statement in paragraph 14 of the PSR, where he said that Mr. Johnson knew the gun was there and handled it. But I don't think that supports the district court's conclusion that they routinely possessed both drugs and guns in Mr. Johnson's presence. So, and that's really all that we're left with, is that Mr. Johnson, at least if co-conspirator liability is the basis for the enhancement, that Mr. Johnson did know about the gun that was found in this residence. But there aren't any specifics related to that gun as to when Mr. Johnson saw it there, where in the house it was located, whether it was near drugs, whether it was on an occasion when drugs were sold from the house. It's just that DB statement that Mr. Johnson knew about and handled the gun. And we don't think that is enough to show that it was reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Johnson that it would be used in connection with drug dealing. And unless there are any further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Mr. Koenig.
Good morning, Your Honors. Morning. Counsel, may it please the Court. Jonathan Koenig, and I appear on behalf of the United States this morning. Indeed, there were guns all over the place in this conspiracy, which is precisely the point in many ways. I'd like to begin by trying to maybe clarify some of the facts that Judge Rovner was asking about. Indeed, the assault rifle at issue was kept at in the upper apartment of a duplex near 44th and North, which is in this near north side of the city of Milwaukee. My understanding is that KR and DB moved after that time frame to a different residence on Port Washington or North Port Washington Road, which is in a different part of the city.
Well, see, here's why I was so confused. If the assault rifle wasn't found in the Port Washington, in the Port Washington residence, how would DB's statement that he purchased the firearm found at Port Washington contradict KR's statement that Johnson purchased the assault rifle when they're talking about two different guns?
It wouldn't, Your Honor. My understanding is that a separate weapon was recovered from the Port Washington residence. My opponent has already discussed some of the reasons why this appeal is somewhat unusual. And all I can really say in that regard is that I did confirm with the Bureau of Prisons earlier this week that Mr. Johnson is currently enrolled in the RDAP, the 500-hour drug program. He has been since October 1st, and I think Mr. Mullins and I agree that there is a concrete issue here about the enhancement, the guideline enhancement, at least potentially affecting the duration of Mr. Johnson's sentence.
You mean the early release? He's not eligible for early release if he completes the drug program or something?
Right. Assuming he completes the program, what will stand between him and early release is this gun enhancement. Other than that, the government regards this as a pretty straightforward case, Your Honors, because the clear error standard is so daunting, and because Judge Edelman did a good job of articulating in his statement of reasons why the enhancement should apply. And I won't belabor the point, but I do disagree with Mr. Mullins that there is a significant discrepancy between KR and DB with regard to this assault rifle. You'll recall that KR says the defendant supplied it. DB says the defendant knew that the gun was there and handled it. There really isn't any significant difference for purposes of reasonable foreseeability between those two statements.
You're saying both of them in different ways connected him to the gun?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And they both describe that residence as one out of which they were distributing drugs as part of the conspiracy.
And which one was that?
That would be the 44th and North residence. So, again, as we argued in our brief, the court's task is not to see if there is any evidence that might undercut the district court's finding, but rather to see if there's any evidence in the record to support it. The two statements of the co-conspirators amply support the judge's finding in this case against the backdrop of evidence of other guns, drug dealing, and so on. So this is not simply a case where the court's relying on the long-established connection between guns and drug trafficking. The court was relying on facts, and we would ask the court to affirm not only the 48-month sentence, but the imposition of the guideline enhancement that's challenged in this appeal.
Just out of curiosity, what was the other two sentences? The two initial guys, what were their sentences, if you know?
Your Honor, I do not know the answer to that question. I can find out and let the court know.
I just wonder if you know.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Mullins, I think you have some time.
I just wanted to point.
That's it.
I just wanted to point out that the discrepancy between KR and DB's statement was identified by the government in its response to our objections to the pre-sentence report.
Well, I was confused.
The government said that according to KR, Mr. Johnson supplied an assault rifle at 44th and North. Well, DB says that he brought the weapon. So I think we should hold the government to its representation of the facts. The other critique I wanted to point out about the district court's finding was that the statements were against the witness's penal interests. I don't think that's accurate, that KR saying that the gun was brought by Mr. Johnson is against KR's penal interests. It's actually shifting the blame to Mr. Johnson. And DB's statement, well, that he brought the gun certainly would be against his penal interests, but it actually supports Mr. Johnson's position. Thank you.
Mr. Mullins, thank you. You were court-appointed.
Yes.
Thank you for taking on this burden.
Well, thank you.
And for doing such a fine job for your client. We really do appreciate it. And we appreciate the government. And we're glad you're being paid again. Okay. Case will be taken under advisement. We're glad we're being paid again.